There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Welcome to our penultimate entry in our series, 'Cause I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It. It's 1941. It's 2026. But the movie, made in 1979, is 1941. Directed by Steven Spielberg, born in 1946, this movie carries a huge load of expectations coming on the heels of Spielberg's Jaws from 1975 and Close Encounters of the Third Kind from 1977. 1979 was supposed to be a huge hit. 1941 was supposed to be a huge hit in 1979, maybe showing up in the Oscars in 1980. Surely the biggest thing since 1776. Remember The Maine in 1898? I don't know why I said that. 1941 is about World War II, which ran from 1939 to 1945. I Love Lucy ran from 1951 to 1957. We're going to talk about this movie in the year 2525, assuming man is still alive. 1959 was the Battle of Camp Cucamonga. Help me! I'm your host, Max Avogadro's number Levine, and over there is your host, Mike 2 to the N minus 1 Loose.
Ah! I Love Lucy? What has that got to do with anything?
I don't know! But I do know we first have to talk about our
poll question.
Last week, we asked you, what is your favorite fantasy movie and why? To my surprise, it was not a universally Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS.
Not a fantasy, that's a documentary.
Oh, that's my fantasy. Tony Kellner, famed mystery writer, says, Lord of the Rings. Oh. It's convincingly mythic while telling small personal stories, and such good acting and a gorgeous setting to spend time in.
Mm.
Yeah, it is neat, all that filming in New Jersey. Jamie Kleinert says, Princess Bride, because perfection.
Mm.
Honestly, it does a really good job of not taking itself too seriously while presenting a great story, has an amazing cast, quotable lines, and while I wish the music was less synthy and more classical acoustic soundtrack, it works. The costuming and location are gorgeous without CGI or extensive post-production. What's post? Keep flailing. It's just great. Like a well-loved favorite hoodie. It might not be the newest or the softest on the inside and might have a few spots that show its age and wear, but it fits and moves and smells like a comfortable hug. See, that should be the tagline for the movie. Princess Bride, your favorite hoodie.
Aw.
Keith Wright, that's probably Willow and the Dark Crystal.
Oh.
I'm assuming that's two movies. There wasn't like a movie you missed called Willow and the Dark Crystal.
Assuming? Really?
Well, which I would actually go see. I had to name two. There are more. That dragon movie with Christian Bale comes to mind.
What dragon movie with Christian Bale?
He means Reign of Fire.
Oh, never saw it.
Yeah, it's...
Probably because it was a dragon movie with Christian Bale.
Dragons.
I like Christian Bale, but that was right at the time when Dragonheart came out, which...
There were a lot of dragon movies at that point.
Yeah.
Tyler Stewart says, Princess Bride as a single movie, Lotter as a story.
No, we're not doing that again. You already did it once. No.
Ah, yes. Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Yes. Charles Forsythe, Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh.
Oh, God. Ooh. Really?
Wow.
I mean, great movie, but whoa.
Yeah.
Are you, Charles, is everything okay?
It is a good movie, but it's not happy. It is really, really not.
Very unhappy movie. Nick Hoffman says, Time Bandits. Oh, too much fun. I forgot to include Pan's Labyrinth. Okay, too many movies. Dave says, looking at other answers, I agree I love Princess Bride and Lord of the Rings, but somehow what popped into my head first was Wizards.
Oh.
Why? I love the ending. The ending is genius. See our episode on Wizards.
Yeah.
I love the Fritz, they shot Fritz scene. It had a unique look and feel for its day. Also, it brings back fond memories of the first time I went to Hong Kong. I stayed at the YMCA in a room that had a TV. You know, it's fun to stay there. It was maybe 1984. I turned on the TV with no expectations, and Wizards was on. So that was a fun and not exotic evening in the Orient for me.
How weird.
Yeah, but Dave, you didn't tell us. Was it, like, subtitled? Was it dubbed?
Jedu, Jedu. I know. That's Japanese, and it's the Beverly yes. Hillbillies. But still,
yes,
practically the same thing.
Steve Kellner writes, not my favorite, but I'm surprised no one mentioned Lady Hawk.
Mm.
Also, and this may not count, Knight Riders.
Oh, yeah.
Kinda.
I mean, fantasy, it's just motorcycles.
Yeah.
But it is, I think it's, I don't know if it's his first film, but it's a really early Ed Harris film.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know he was in that.
Yeah, I know. We all, the only person we know in it is Brother Blue. The only reason we know him is because he was a street performer in Harvard Square.
Yep.
And how he got into that movie, I will never know.
No clue. No clue. Matt Reisman says, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Oh, very, okay, he's picked one specifically.
Mm.
It's the film that I feel really transports you to another world. It's beautiful, clearly made with love and fun. But I think there should be more animated films on this list. Well, give us some.
Yeah.
I grew up on the Disney animated movies, and there's something about Aladdin that I've always loved.
Yeah.
The Sword and the Stone is a close second. Maybe I just like magical blue mentor figures.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's wearing blue.
See our movie on the Smurfs.
Our movie?
Didn't we review one of the Smurfs movies?
I think you meant show. See our show on the Smurfs. We didn't make a movie.
We could have.
But we didn't.
Believe me, we could have made one better than the Smurfs movie.
I've had movements better than the Smurfs movie.
We don't need to hear about that again.
Would you rather hear about the Smurfs? I ask you.
We can all check your blog for that. Kelly J. Cooper says, I was thinking about all my options and trying to decide. I think I could watch The Princess Bride over and over forever. But if we look at which movie I actually watched over and over, admittedly when I was a kid, it was Beastmaster. See our last episode. Hey, she's honest. A lot of us watched Beastmaster many times.
Well, that's because it was the only thing on. It was free.
True. Yeah. Dan Schaefer says, I like a lot of the ones others have mentioned, but I think Excalibur should be somewhere on the list.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Brian Mundo says, oh, God, I can't pick just one. Luckily, Fifth Element isn't in this genre. Well, I would say Willow was one of my first loved movies. It really stuck with me when I was young, but also I loved Pan's Labyrinth. Huh, I didn't know there'd be another for Pan's Labyrinth, but okay.
That's three.
Also, is Kubo and the Two Strings fantasy?
Sure.
Because, yeah, no, it's way too realistic.
Also, to be fair, we will allow Fifth Element because it's Brian.
Yeah. Which is good because Byron Ho says, The Fifth Element. This is for Brian Mundo. And
they're
of course,
twins.
From the lost fantasy kingdom in the mythical land of Canada, we have Vince. Says, Beastmaster was our family film. We would always watch it if it was on, and my mom in particular had a great time commenting about it. I'm sure your mom just wasn't into Mark Singer.
Mm.
In general, I'm not a big sword and sorcery fan, and my favorite fantasy films are, we got classy here, Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, okay.
And I love The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. I love how death is represented and when Venus Uma Thurman is revealed and says, hello, it makes me laugh every time. Uma Thurman makes a great Venus on the half shell.
Oprah?
Uma.
Oprah.
Uma.
Oprah?
Uma. I think we invented a new form of Marco Polo.
We liked it, Dave.
Yeah. But those are great. Oh, we have some blinky blinky. Oh, yes. Hello, my little fantasy, my little sword and sorcery creature, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Really?
With a rather long entry.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question for the week. What is your favorite fantasy movie and why? Gosh, guys, could you come up with a harder question? I mean, there are so many that are my favorites. I'm going to give you a few and why. I'm going to go with Metropolis to begin with because I think, first of all, it is a fantastic movie. It's also one of the very first fantasy movies. All right, Trip to the Moon is pretty fantastical, but there's something incredible about Metropolis. So that's going to be my first answer. My second answer, Mary Poppins. And the reason I picked that one is because that is the very first movie I ever saw. I only sort of remember being in the movie theater because I was only three, but I do remember going to the movie theater to see in that movie. The next one I'm going to say is Neverending Story because Neverending Story is, I kind of feel like that kid sometimes, you know, when you're the outcast and everybody bullies you and then you get to go to this wonderful place and be a hero. I mean, who doesn't love that stuff? And then next one I'm going to come up with is Labyrinth, because Labyrinth is something that's very close to my heart because it has created such an incredible world that I get to be a part of. And that's I think I've mentioned it before, the masquerade ball. And it's just so fantastic. You actually get to live in this fantasy world for a couple of days. It's awesome. And the last one, because I just kind of think it's just like the answer to have, Wizard of Oz. I mean, when you were a little kid, at least when I was a little kid, you look forward to seeing it on TV every year, because it only came on once a year. And it was just, that was like the fantasy of all fantasies. So there are my answers. I'm sorry I don't have so many, but you asked a crazy question, guys. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
That's kind of a lot. I also would argue Metropolis is more science fiction than fantasy.
I would, too.
Of course, at that era, I don't know.
I would, yeah.
But those were great answers. Thank you. And all of you, that was a great list. Seems that Lord of the Rings and The Princess Bride are our front runners by a long shot.
Oh, I don't know. I think Pan's Labyrinth is actually, there were three people who voted for that.
It picked up more votes than I thought it would. But what about you, Mike? What's your favorite sword and sorcery fantasy movie?
I also am a big fan of Lady Hawk. Not real fan of the armor and the music as much.
Well, yeah.
But I really like that film. I understand. I mean, Lord of the Rings, I'm sort of excluding Lord of the Rings because it's sort of like, well, yeah, but what else besides that? Because that's an obvious choice. I also have a really, really soft spot for Krull. Yes, I know. But it has some really cool fantasy fairy tale elements that I think work really well. It honestly feels a lot like a D&D game, which...
Yeah.
I was playing at the... Oh, I'm still playing at the time. So, I mean, yeah, I want to go with those. Kubo and the Two Strings, I adore. I think of that as sort of more myth, but that... Blah, 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 whatever. So I'm going to go... Yeah, Lady Hawk and Krull. See our entire episode on Krull.
Krull. We haven't done Lady Hawk, have we?
No, we haven't done Lady Hawk. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But
Isn't that weird?
What is your favorite fantasy film besides Lord of the Rings?
Besides Lord of the Rings, which, yeah, is one of mine, I actually agree with Doris, especially because recently I was talking to Cheese Boy.
Oh.
And he pointed out Wizard of Oz is very much like a D&D campaign.
Sure.
And I had not thought of it that way, but it is. You've got the main character picking up a lot of NPCs, character arcs, specific quests, rewards. It's very D&D. And honestly, that is the one that has stayed with me the longest. I got to go with Wizard of Oz.
Oh, interesting. But I bet what else is interesting is a new poll question.
Yes, indeed. Slightly inspired by this week's movie, I want to know, we want to know, everyone wants to know, what is your favorite
Steven Spielberg film?
And why?
Oh.
And we will reveal the classified location of where to respond at the end of the show. But now...
Elsa.
Facts. 1941. Budget, $35 million.
Yeah.
Now, this part kind of surprised me because this is legendary as one of Spielberg's biggest flops. In this country, it tanked. Globally, it made $92
million. Well.
Now, you have to understand, that's way below what they were hoping because this was coming off his history of Jaws and Close Encounters, both of which made all the money that ever existed.
Yeah.
This movie, by the way, was nominated for three Oscars.
Was it?
Cinematography, sound, and visual effects.
Uh-huh.
I should also point out it was nominated for 2 Stinkers Bad Movie Awards.
The what?
The Stinkers Bad Movie Awards. These guys...
They're not the Razzies.
No, they predated the Razzies by 4 years.
Oh.
They stopped, though, in 2006.
Oh.
I had to look them up. I'd never heard of them.
Oh, I like to watch their show every year. Isn't that sad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The red carpet's the best part.
It's not red.
It ends up that way. Apparently, the awards were nominated. One didn't count because I believe her scene was cut, but it was for Worst Accent Female. And it was for Penny Marshall trying to do a German accent.
Really?
The other was John Belushi as worst supporting actor.
Wow.
Ouch.
Oh, we'll come back to John Belushi.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
Some scenes were so noisy during filming that the crew couldn't hear Spielberg yell cut. He had to fire a prop machine gun in the air to get the action to stop.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The opening scene where a young woman swims naked in the ocean, very much reminiscent of Jaws.
Reminiscent?
Yeah.
Boy, you're being kind.
That is the same woman. That's Susan Baclini.
Ah.
Yeah, only we see a lot more of her in this one.
Ah.
This was viewed as such a failure in the U.S. that when the advanced teaser trailer for Raiders of the Lost Ark was made, it listed all of Spielberg's previous movies except this one.
Ooh, that's really interesting. Not this one. Oh,
Yeah, funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
The extras cast as the Japanese submarine crew were hired because they had the singular qualification of being, well, Asian. Most of them were these typical laid-back Southern Californians. None of them had acting training. And they put them in a scene with one of the greatest actors in Japanese history, Toshiro Mifune,
well,
who was so outraged at their attitudes that he asked Spielberg if he could deal with them personally.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he then started yelling at him to get in line and started slapping them around, saying, "This is how Japanese men are trained!" And Mifune worked with them from that point on,
or
and they were scared out of their minds of him. The scene where Captain Wild Bill Kelso, yeah, John Belushi, slips and falls off the wing of his plane as it's about to take off, that was not in the script or planned. Belushi slipped as he was climbing onto the plane. They kept it because it fit the character.
Yeah, I've read that he actually went to the hospital for a few days after that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. He missed a few days shooting because he was partying a little too hard during the nightlife.
What? No.
Now, according to the co-writer, Bob Gale, by the way, the other writer, if you've noticed, was Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah.
As in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Many of the events in this movie are sort of based on real incidents.
Sure.
The Army really did put an anti-aircraft gun in the yard of a homeowner on the main coast. A Japanese submarine, I-17, shelled a refinery in Elwood on the California coast on the evening of February 23, 1942. The shells missed the refinery by a wide margin, but the unexpected attack started an invasion panic that night. And false air raid alarms over Los Angeles, and the civil defense and army began firing into the air for an hour.
And all they hit were paper plates on strings held by Ed Wood.
Yep. The infamous, and this is real, Zoot Suit riots,
oh, yeah,
took place in 1943. This is a real thing, clashes between Hispanic youths and servicemen.
Mm.
Now, Robert Stack was
give
not...
Give a hoot, don't zoot.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Zoot Suit Riot. Major General Stillwell, the character who shows up in this, is a real person. He's played by Robert Stack in this. Mm-hmm. He was not the first choice. Both Charlton Heston and John Wayne turned down the role.
Yeah.
After they gave them the script. Wayne went so far, he not only couldn't do it because of his health, he had, you know, due to some incidents with the Conqueror.
What?
At that point.
See our entire episode on
the Conqueror. But he tried to get Spielberg to drop the whole project. He thought it was unpatriotic and the satirical take on the fear and paranoia that Americans felt after Pearl Harbor was in poor taste and disrespectful.
Well, he would know, being an American, that wasn't actually over there fighting.
Yeah. Heston is thought to have turned it down for the same reasons and because he was still mad at Spielberg for not giving him the part of Chief Brody in Jaws.
Okay. Thank you, Steven Spielberg. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Actually, Robert Stack bears an uncanny resemblance to the real General Stillwell, so that worked out.
Stillwell Angel?
Oh. Yeah. You're gonna lose. In a deleted scene, Hollis P. Wood, Hollywood, is threatened with a torture device that turns out to be a coat hanger. Spielberg hated losing that joke and swore he would put it in every one of his future movies until it stayed there. Fortunately, it stayed in the next movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. The man eating spaghetti during one of the riot and fight scenes is also played by John Belushi. You just can't tell because his face is full of spaghetti.
Ah.
According to Jack Nicholson, and there's an interesting sentence I never thought I'd say with this movie, Stanley Kubrick allegedly told Spielberg that, quote, this movie was great, but not funny.
What?
Kind of a problem, as this is a comedy.
Is it?
Oh. Yeah. The gas station that Wild Bill Kelso accidentally blows up in this movie is the same one seen in Duel, the TV movie from Spielberg, his first effort in 1971, and Lucille Benson is the proprietress in both.
TV movie, TV movie, TV movie.
The dialogue between Claude and Herbie was written along the same lines as Ralph Cramden and Ed Norton's interaction in The Honeymooners. They actually offered the roles to Gleason and Carney, but Gleason refused, says he couldn't work with Carney any longer.
Uh-oh.
Now, this was true up until 1985 when they made Izzy and Moe. Spielberg admitted in an interview that the lukewarm reception to this movie was one of the biggest lessons of his career, citing personal arrogance that got in the way after the runaway successes of Jaws and Close Encounters. He also regretted ceding control of the action and miniature sequence, such as the Ferris wheel collapse in the finale, to second unit directors and model units. He didn't do that in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, that ruined the whole film.
Yep. Reese and Foley are the names used by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale for any police officers or government agents in movies they've written. Oh. This is in I Want to Hold Your Hand, Used Car, and Back to the Future Part 2.
Ah.
Reese, by the way, is the theatrical debut of Mickey Rourke. Yeah, I don't believe has any lines.
Okay, I didn't even notice him.
Yeah. By the way, the line that Robert Stack delivers isn't in the script. When he had just finished his long scene with John Belushi, he actually turned and looked at him and said, "That's the craziest son of a bitch I've ever met," and they put it in the movie.
Mm.
All in all, there are 7 directors involved in some way making this movie. Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale wrote it. John Milius was an executive producer. Spielberg directed it. And Brian De Palma is involved in that he contributed the gag of the Japanese asking Slim Pickens, "Where's Hollywood?" whose nick and the character's name is Hollis P. Hollywood. And they try to do a who's on first routine with the comedy sucked out. One of the sailors in the street riot is played by James Caan.
Okay.
He just happened to be passing the day on the set and was persuaded to be in it by Spielberg. This is the only time Caan ever worked with Spielberg.
Mm.
The submarine captain played by Toshiro Mifune was originally supposed to be played by John Belushi. He's well known for his Japanese impressions, particularly his samurai character from Saturday Night Live. But Spielberg finally figured he'd be better off as Kelso.
Which is more insulting, the idea of John Belushi playing the Japanese sub commander or making Toshiro Mifune do it?
I hope he got paid a lot. There is a ton of other stuff. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, and Mike actually has something.
Just one little thing. Just one more little thing. Just one more little thing.
Yes, Lieutenant.
This is the only time Toshiro Mifune uses his own voice in an American movie for both the English and the Japanese. Usually, all the other times, he was dubbed by, take a guess,
John Wayne.
Paul Frees.
Oh, no, really?
Yes, Boris Badenoff himself. Yes. That voice.
Allow me to
be
introducing myself. I am Lord Toranaga. I'm
Toshiro Mifune. Yeah.
Wow.
We all know that Paul Frees can do many more voices than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But Max, I would dearly, dearly, dearly love to hear you compact this plot into something. I'm going to give you 30 seconds.
I'll try, but hang on. Flash! Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. It's 1941, both the movie and the year, barely a week after Pearl Harbor in Los Angeles, California. Tensions run high. Soldiers are everywhere. Random cast members from Saturday Night Live and SCTV roam the streets at will. A zoot suitor named Wally is in love with a girl named Donna, whose father does not approve, for some reason. Elsewhere, Otter from Animal House is trying to get some hanky-panky going with Officer Lewis from RoboCop, but she's only turned on by aircraft. And hey-ho, Kokomo, there's an actual Japanese submarine nearby with an actual Japanese living legend Toshiro Mifune on board. He and Nazi killer-turned-Nazi Christopher Lee are obsessed with Slim Pickens' bowel movements and blowing up Hollywood because that would surely cripple the American military. Robert Stack watches Dumbo. John Belushi flies a plane badly and falls off things a lot. There's a jitterbug contest. Street brawls. Eddie Deason with a ventriloquist dummy on a Ferris wheel. A tank gets sunk. A house falls over. Toshiro Mifune heads back to Japan without a navigation system, but with his own John Belushi as a prize. The day is saved. My head hurts. Mommy! Mommy! Mommy!
The film.
How's that? Thank you. Thank you.
I actually didn't know you were going to do it quickly. I just was like, go ahead and try and make this shorter than 2 hours.
I wanted to do my Walter Winchell.
Wow. Is that what that was? Okay.
Sort of.
Max, so I happen to know that you did not see this when it came out because you mentioned last week the reason you chose it was because you'd never seen it.
I have never seen this in any form.
I have a startling coincidence to infer.
Yes?
Neither have I.
No!
Do you remember why you didn't see it?
Honestly, the previews didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I remember watching them go, what the hell? I couldn't tell if it was a comedy or a war movie. And also, I don't think it lasted very long in the theaters.
I don't remember. I remember the previews very well. I remember that. But as to whether or not it's a comedy or what it is, we'll decide that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of actors in this film. A lot. We're going to have to go quick.
Well, we got to start with our boys, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, who have no scenes together for some reason.
Yeah, why would you do that?
I don't know. Yeah, seriously. They never worked that well together.
No.
Yeah, John Belushi, who is kind of doing Bluto with a plane and random dialogue.
Well, he spends more than half the film, with me asking, is he in the same film as everyone else?
Yeah, you do get the feeling he just sort of stumbles from his own movie into this movie and then leaves.
They like don't give him anything much to do.
No, it is a tremendous waste of him.
Yeah. I mean, this
Dan Aykroyd at least gets a couple of speeches. You know, he gets to do his rapid fire thing.
Well, he also, I hate to say this, but his rousing speech is more rousing than Bill Pullman's from ID4.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That is something that's really hard to do. Rousing speech and dance of the future are two things, or music of the future, are two things you kind of want to stay away from because they're really hard to do. Dan Aykroyd's fine, quite honestly. It's not much of a part, but he's Dan Aykroyd at his peak here. He's fast. He's as funny as he can be. So, yeah, he's
not given very much to do.
Yeah.
Treat William, and both his eyebrows are in this.
Yeah, he is approaching handsome and is almost distinguishable from other people.
Kind of.
He's a bully. And he plays the bully fine. Yeah. We don't like him, I guess.
You're not sure at the beginning if you're supposed to like him or not. It becomes very clear quickly. You're not.
Yeah.
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 Ned Beatty.
Wasted.
Completely.
He plays dad.
Almost. Yeah. He's Ward Douglas. You might as well call him Ward Cleaver.
Well, it's not like he's an Academy Award winning actor or anything.
Wait a minute.
Lorraine Gary as Joan Douglas, his wife, who's there.
We saw her as the just Chief Brody's wife.
Yeah.
In Jaws.
And like that film, she's in a film here. And in Focus. Yeah.
she is. That is true.
Speaking of Jaws, we have Murray Hamilton, who played the
Murray
murder
Hamilton,
there.
Indeed.
He is in this film.
He is. He exists. Yeah. He was also in Jaws. He's another Jaws alumnus. Yeah. He was the mayor.
But
yeah.
Christopher Lee.
Christopher friggin' Lee.
I gotta say, his machine gun German is great. He is really speaking faster than Dan Aykroyd, and it was actual German.
Sir Christopher Lee spoke German.
Yeah.
He was a spy during World War II.
Really?
Yes, he was. He was in the OSS.
With Lucille Ball?
What? He was not only a spy, he was an assassin.
Oh.
Don't you know that famous story where during Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson's trying to explain to him, now here you shove the knife in and it's going to make this sound, and Lee just turns and looks at him and goes, I know the sound of a knife entering a body.
Ew.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, yeah. There you go.
Again, largely wasted except for some terrific German delivery.
It's also just weird seeing him do comedy.
He's
near to Shirafumofune. It's just weird. So
it's kind of a shame because watching those two interact for like the 80 seconds or so they do.
Yeah.
Is kind of interesting. I would have liked to see them. That the movie should have been about them.
Yeah. Tim Matheson.
Otter from Animal House. Yeah. Yes.
He's
playing another horny jerk.
Yeah. And we don't care for him much. Do we want to mention Toshirô Mifune? I feel it's unfair.
Toshirô Mifune, this movie is unworthy of him. Yeah, just leave it at that.
I literally cannot figure out why he's there.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
I don't know how they got him to do it.
Yeah. Warren Oates as Colonel Madman
Maddox.
He's fine.
That's Sergeant Hulka from Stripes.
Utterly unrecognizable, but he's fine.
Yeah, he's there. Robert Stack. Robert Stack is fun. Robert Stack is doing his Robert Stackiest, doing the great stone face. I do kind of like him mouthing the words along with Dumbo.
Yeah, he's almost his level he was in Airplane. Mm. Not quite. He doesn't get enough to do. I think he, strangely, Robert Stack can actually be really funny, which is not a term I usually associate with Robert Stack.
It's that same kind of Leslie Nielsen comedy where he's such a straight man that if he plays it just a little extra, he's really funny.
Yeah.
Nancy Allen is Donna Stratton.
Yeah, she certainly is.
She exists.
Yeah, she plays a character in this film.
She does. And she does a jitterbug and yells Wally a lot.
Lucille Benson, blah, blah, blah. Jordan Cohen doesn't even have a picture. John Candy, wow. Talk about waste.
That is, John Candy is completely superfluous in this, and that is a damn shame.
If there's one thing we don't want, it's John Candy being funny, because nobody wants that.
No, we don't need that.
Luckily, we don't have it here. Yeah. For 5 seconds, we get Elisha Cook Jr., who's been in everything.
Everything. House on Haunted Hill, Star Trek, everything.
Yeah.
And, of course, we have the D's, Eddie Deason, who is the best professional annoyer ever.
Oh, I don't know.
This guy has made it in... Huh?
I think in this film, he actually has a rival, something I never thought anyone would think to do. I think he might be superseded by his own ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah, because they said, how do we make Eddie Deason more irritating? I know, give him a ventriloquist dummy.
Yeah.
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 And there's Bobby DiCicco, who is Wally Stevens. I think he's our hero.
Yeah, notice how far down on the list he is.
Yeah, and I will say this, he can dance.
Sure.
Yeah.
That boy can dance.
That boy can, in fact, dance. There are also a crap ton of strange cameos in this. Lenny and Squiggy are in it.
I didn't see them. I know they're there.
Willie and Joe, the two guys in the anti-aircraft gun. That's them. Joe Flaherty from SCTV is Raul, the club host. And standing next to him with one line is Patti LuPone, the queen of Broadway.
Not here she isn't. she has been dethroned.
All I can figure is she was walking by, they threw a bag over her head and said, stand here, say this line, and nobody gets hurt. That's my only explanation.
We'll take you to the theater in this nice windowless white van.
Exactly. Wait, this isn't Evita. Hey, no, it is. This is an extra scene.
Would you smell my handkerchief? Does this smell like chloroform to you?
Yeah, well, so the cast is many and varied, and we are loaded with talented people.
Yeah, we are. This film, we can say whatever you want to say about it, this film is loaded with talent.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Max, I have a question for you. We start off the film with a crawl.
Mm-hmm.
Did they really need to explain December 7th to us? Did we not?
3 weeks before Christmas?
No, what happened?
I don't think they needed to explain Pearl Harbor Day to us.
At length?
I don't think even now almost 50 years after this movie that we would need that explained to us.
Did that hit you strangely when you watched this? Like, seriously, you're going to explain this as your setup?
Yeah, it did kind of like, oh, okay, you think we're idiots. Got it.
Yeah, like, I mean, all they had to do was say December, whatever, 13th, December 16th, yeah. 1941. That's it. That's yeah. all in Los Angeles. That's all they had to say. That's it.
Yep, sure.
And
yeah.
Instead, they had to talk about the conflict and, you know, the Japanese this and the blah and the Germans that, and it's like really
yeah.
okay. Then there's nothing even funny in it. It's like you'd think they might say something funny to give you an idea of what's to come, but they don't. They just give you a history lesson.
Very, very, very dry, very factual, very historic.
And then to keep you in the moment, to keep you thinking about 1941, Steven Spielberg rips off himself.
Yes, he gives us a Jaws reference because nothing says World War II. Like Jaws.
And in case we don't get it, they play the Jaws theme over the naked lady somehow.
Yeah.
Jumping right from the ocean into a studio tank. Yeah.
And ending up hanging off the conning tower of a submarine. And apparently, this is true, by the way, in Japan, nobody looks up.
No.
They're not capable. It's a big taboo. Don't research that.
They're missing a bone in their necks. That's
Dave will back me up on this, won't you, Dave? Wink.
Yeah, you're the nice naked lady.
Apparently, by the way, the one Japanese sailor who does spot her decides naked blonde lady equals Hollywood.
Yeah,
because yeah.
And apparently he's never seen a naked woman before because he's literally stunned into only smiling and saying the word Hollywood.
Yeah, he didn't seem to think it was fit to mention that, hey, you know, there's a naked American woman up on our radio antenna. You want to? No? Okay, never mind.
Oh, she was on the Periscope, Max. These were Periscope jokes.
Periscope jokes. Yes.
Well, that's okay. You know, every film can start on an off footing because they will go right from there to throne food.
First they have a small dance sequence in a kitchen, and then yes, we have a food fight. Where have we seen that with a movie with John Belushi and Matheson?
Can't place it. But at least it's hilarious.
I think it's supposed to be, yes. And then suddenly we're in Death Valley, because that's funny, and John Belushi ruins a gas station because he seems to expect that your average gas station attendant knows how to fuel a Tomahawk airplane.
Well, never mind the fact that they don't take the same fuel.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't think most fuel pumps pump out jet fuel. It could have been diesel.
To be fair, I don't know. If somebody wants to write in and tell us, you guys totally ruined everything because, of course, they use the same blah, 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 you feel free.
Do they just use standard diesel?
I honestly don't know. They wouldn't have had diesel at a gas station in 1941.
No, the trucks didn't use it then?
Yeah, but they wouldn't have it at a regular gas station in the middle of dual highway.
Okay.
But anyway, and if you want to correct us on that, you just feel free.
Yeah, please, let us know.
So, this is, I have this feeling this is going to be a really short show.
It might be.
Hey, if that happens, it happens. So let's see, what else happened? Did this film, to you, feel like it was taking place in the time period in which they tell us it takes place?
Kinda. The setting, I mean, the sets are pretty good. They certainly throw enough references at us. The music is all, you know, Andrews Sisters and big band stuff.
Well, it wasn't the Andrews Sisters. It was the Andrews Sisters' other sisters, Chip and Emil.
It was not the Andrews Sisters, but an incredible simulation. It was the same style. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think it was the Abramowitz Sisters.
Bronkowitz Sisters.
Yep. That's it.
So
the costumes, the costumes and the clothing are very period accurate. So are the vehicles.
And yet, to me, nothing felt authentic. This film just screams the 1970s. It felt like a period Hollywood film as told through the lens of the 70s. It just felt unlived in.
Yeah, it felt very much, like I say, it got the look right, but I always thought I was on a set.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no, and none of these locations are believable to me. This is, you know, Backlotistan.
Yeah. Although, you know, one thing that is funny, you're going to have to admit this, Max. I know you don't want to, but
Yeah.
Sex jokes about a woman who has a plane fetish.
Oh, you know, my sides are still aching from that.
Did you understand that?
Define understand. I saw what they were going for. I saw they never got near it.
Well,
it was so they could do a lot of sex slash aviation term jokes.
Yeah.
There are so many of these little... Oh, wait, it's that guy from that thing in this movie. Angelo, the guy who puts Eddie Deason and whoever the hell the other guy is up into the Ferris wheel. That's Max from Heart to Heart.
Yeah.
I just noticed that. You know?
Was that a highlight for you?
That was a highlight.
Could I still hear his voice doing the voiceover for that, for the opening for that show. Yeah.
She's gorgeous. Yeah. I was also
and he
really
killed
hoping.
His wife. Oops.
Too soon.
Floats up on the shore. What kind of wood floats up on. Anyway.
Doesn't float. What kind of wood doesn't float?
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So there's two major choreographed scenes in this film, and I would like you to tell me which one was stiffer, the dance contest or when they were running through the bathroom on the submarine.
Oh, boy. That is tough.
I know. Because it's Slim Pickens in his underwear.
I got to go more, just because of the scale, I got to go with the dance contest.
Yeah, because
that looked so phony. And the huge, huge fight at the end, all I can think of is that bit in Blazing Saddles. Get your pies here for the great pie fight.
Yeah. I haven't seen precision choreography like that since At Long Last Love.
Ooh, ouch.
Which, if you did not know, is a Peter Bogdanovich film where he decided, no, we're not going to dub or do anything later. We're going to record the singing and dancing live. And we're going to leave it in. Yeah.
I also was hoping for a lot of this movie, we would manage to avoid any racist humor.
Oh, thankfully, no, and they fulfilled our dreams.
For the first about hour and a half, they really hold it back. And then it's like, I can't hold it in anymore. And we get eat lead slant. We get jokes about white face, black face.
At the same time,
the guy in white face says to the guy in black face, get to the back of the tank. Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny and uncomfortable, wasn't it?
So yeah, you know what was really funny? Attempted rape. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
All
right, that was so funny. I'm gonna try to identify the four plots of this film and see if you agree.
Only four?
Pretty much.
All right.
We have Wally, his girlfriend, and his rival Stretch.
Yeah.
That is one plot.
Right.
Captain Hot Pants trying to score on the plane.
Sadly,
that is a major plot.
That is a pretty major plot, yeah.
John Belushi trying to find enemy planes.
And really trying to find anything to do in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lost Japanese sub trying to shoot anything in the U.S. Not entirely unlike those lost Japanese sub episodes of Gilligan's Island. Actually, that's who I would rather have seen in this role. Vito Scotti.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think that's about right. There's some, you know, the stuff of the civil defense, the family trying to prepare. But yeah, most of that is background stuff.
My question.
But yeah, it's a, yeah.
Of those four, which one were you most invested in?
I think it was the kid trying to get Eddie Deason down from the Ferris wheel. That was the only, there was real tension there.
I just wanted them to be on the wheel when it went in the water. That's all I wanted. Yeah, of course, we know who survives that, the stupid dummy, because it's made of wood. I have an alternate title for this film.
Which is?
It's a mad, 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 mad war.
Ooh, except that was actually funny in places.
I know, but this has that sort of aren't we wacky and don't we have every star you can think of thrown into this film feeling? Yeah. Because
what did you think of the editing of this film? This film is 2 hours long, which is oddly long for a comedy.
All right. I have some bad news for you.
Yes?
Spielberg's cut was 2 hours 45.
I've heard of that, the so-called director's cut, which became a cult hit after they showed it on TV.
Yeah, and then he re-released it in DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
The editing? Okay. Mm-hmm. My thought, and this is one of my notes... How did this film get through editing and still get released? Oh, no, we've given away the ending.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Let's just go Let's to the just, end.
Yeah, we've never right. done this Let's, before, but yeah, no, we're done.
We're done.
The finish.
Max, how much did you hate 1941?
I didn't hate it, honestly, because I was not. I was expecting very, very little, because this is a legendary flop, even though economically it was just not a flop, but disappointing.
Yeah.
What got me was, okay, I could see the remnants of a decent movie here, but it's so colossally not funny.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a comedy where zero of the jokes land.
Mm.
What's more disappointing is you have some genuinely funny people in this. How do you have Jim Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, and John Candy, and nobody's funny?
You have this.
I don't understand. It's, you know what it reminded me of? When you and I traveled many years ago to a small town in England, which bears your name, Glenluce.
Ah.
And for dinner, we ate at the only local place to eat, and I had macaroni and cheese. And I remember sitting there eating it and going, this has no flavor at all.
Yeah.
It's not even bad. It just does not register with my taste buds. I can feel the texture in my mouth, but I've never experienced that. It was like eating solidified air. This was like that for comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, it has the structure, it has the parts, it just ain't funny.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? What did you think? As if I couldn't guess.
Well, now I have to take the cloth off the little surprise. Mm-hmm. Remember way, way back, there was an episode we did where we decided to pretend for the entire episode that we really liked it, and that we were like talking about the subtle nuances of the film and everything, and just so we could at the end just change our minds. This is not that show.
No.
I have notes such as, never has so much money been spent for so few laughs.
Yeah.
War is more fun when everyone's incompetent. And also the ending. I don't know about you, but I was so pissed. We do not get a payoff. They don't sink the sub.
They don't sink. Not only they don't sink the sub, Wild Bill attacks the sub single-handedly. I'm thinking, oh, he's going to like sink it in some hilarious way.
No.
No.
It
he's
just
taken
leaves.
Prisoner, and that's it. We start to see Wally get a contract to, because he's such an amazing dancer,
sure.
And the talent scout was there. That doesn't pay off.
No. Nope.
We don't hear about how, if Ned Beatty going to get his house replaced, which admittedly he destroyed with an anti-aircraft gun.
Well, and that's one of the things about this film. There is so much stuff that is telegraphed. As soon as we see the outside shot of that house, it's like, okay, when's the house going down the cliff? Like, we know it's going to happen.
Yeah. It's gonna.
Or like when we first see Captain Hotpants in the plane.
Help.
No, we see Captain Hotpants in the plane, and first she accidentally hits one of the levers. It's like, well, we know the bomb's gonna come out of the plane. Why do we have to wait for it to happen? We know it's coming. Why are you doing this? There's a point when we're on the Japanese sub, and for whatever reason, they just stop subtitling what's going on, and we have no idea what they're saying. And I just figure the people who did the subtitling went, and then they just Norman Krasner'd their way home.
Yeah.
The telegraphing.
And you know what? It didn't matter.
Oh, the telegraphing is painful. It is just.
Yeah.
I didn't even smile once during this film. Like, there was nothing that made me even want to laugh. And it's 2 hours long. And I'm just sitting there going, you know, this is the first time in my life when I'm going to agree with John Wayne. Spielberg, you shouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. It's not that it's bad. It's just cloyingly unfunny.
Completely. I don't understand, because Spielberg can do comedy. He's done funny stuff, or he's had like funny elements in his movies.
Yeah.
Has he ever done a comedy?
Apparently not.
No. I guess he learned his lesson from this.
Oh, man. And yeah,
hey.
I apologize. Not since Freddy got fingered have I felt so bad about an episode. But what I don't feel bad about is our poll question. Max, would you go over that again? Because we love your answers. We always love your answers.
We do. They're great. They're great stuff. We want to know, what is your favorite
Steven Spielberg film?
and why? And you can answer that on the battlefield of our website, MaxMikeMovies.com.
There's no battle.
You can leave a comment there. You can also, do you think we were too harsh on this movie? You can comment on the movie, on the show, suggestions for other shows. You can also email us at us@MaxMikeMovies.com. You can find us at various social medias. Well, two. You know,
Facebook
and Blue Sky.
And Blue Sky.
Yeah. Yep, under Max Mike Movies. Yeah. You can find us on the podcast at Ast of your podcap.
Podcast.
the half-assed podcap.
Yeah.
App show. Of your choice.
Yeah.
Under Max Mike Movies. And of course, you can join Doris and real Julia Roberts and call us at our hotline and leave a voicemail at 617-398-7266. Again, that's 617-398-7266.
Squee.
But we are coming to the very end of this extended series.
Are we just going to extend it 2 episodes or are we going to extend it 4?
Ooh, I don't know.
I'll put it out there right now, Max. Can you think of another movie you would like to do that we haven't done?
I'm sure.
All right, let's make it a full 12, okay. An even dozen.
Okay, we'll do an even dozen, as they say.
But that means I have to choose.
In that case, I lied to calling this the penultimate episode, and I deeply apologize for that, and I blame the jazz music.
Yeah, and we also want to apologize for the past 45 minutes.
Yes, but what are we going to watch next week?
Man, there is so much to choose from. I think I need something that moves a little faster than this comedic fest. And I'm going to pick a film that stars somebody I really don't care for. And quite honestly, it's a film that I probably shouldn't like. Mm-hmm. Do I like it, though? That's the question, because next week, we are going to embrace our national treasure.
Oh, dear.
It is a Nicolas Cage film where he plays Indiana Jones and goes looking for hidden American treasure all over the country. Well, mostly D.C.
That's right. And he's going to find out by having sex with the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. No, that's not in this. There's no New York in this film.
But how am I not in this movie?
But there is a national treasure.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.